This podcast is brought to you by Systemo, making IT systems work for your business.
Hello and welcome to the English Football Show right here on FNR, Football Nation Radio, your home of football in Australia and around the world. You're with Christopher Chrysostomou and Mitch Keating. It's a pretty empty studio today. It's almost as empty as the crowd for Croatia versus England. But we're going to kick it off in a different way to usual. We're going to kick it off with our Aussie Watch segment.
Aussie!
Because the Socceroos had a massive victory this morning, 4-0 against Kuwait. I guess you would say now that they're probably favourites for the Qatari World Cup.
Look, obviously a 4-0 win to start for the Socceroos, absolutely fantastic. Obviously Arnie, had a new lineup as well today. A new look lineup, with Jedinak now out and Milligan leading from the front. But midfield worked fantastically well, and it was great to see Janu scoring as well as Alan Mabil, and obviously Tom Rogic as he does every second game for us. So. Fantastically done by the Socceroos this morning, and yeah, really positive signs.
And with the new pairing of Irvine and Luongo in midfield, it's something that we're looking forward to. We've seen them both play in the EFL Championship, and both have shown that Luongo in the past year has shown that he's a great defensive midfielder, and now we're seeing that with Mile Jedinak gone. That's something that I think we'll see further on in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. I think one thing we saw in the World Cup was we probably had four midfielders that we couldn't fit into probably a three midfielder system. And with Jedinak out, it kind of lets Luongo hold that role. We have probably more consistency in our starting 11 with Moy and Rogic as well. So, obviously you look back to 2015 and Luongo was probably a bit more attacking, but he probably dropped off form in the year or two after that. But since then, he's been fantastic for both QPR and the Socceroos. And that matching with Irvine this morning, they just worked fantastically well, crossing left, right, and moving the ball really well.
Australia had a deserving 2-0 lead in the first half. And an interesting stat here, it took Danny Vukovic 32 minutes until he touched the ball in that first half.
Yeah, well, I guess that's a good stat for the Socceroos, if anything. The less the goalkeeper's doing, probably the better. But great to see Danny out there. Great story for him. Obviously, probably well-needed rest for Matt Ryan. I think from back to front, the Socceroos were fantastic this morning, and positive signs against a Kuwait, which can be hard to read, but more fixtures to come under Arnie, but it was a great start to an era under him.
And Mark Milligan was named captain instead of Trent Sainsbury, who we all believe would be captain. Another interesting stat, 17 fouls to 3. So Australia conceded 17 fouls in that game.
Yeah, well, like I said before, I think it was just the way that Australia moved the ball so well and just holding possession and possession, how they used possession. And I think, with a new game plan under Arnie, that's probably what we could be seeing is team or opponents getting frustrated with ball movement, which is fantastic.
Graham Arnold did praise the performance after the game, but he did say that they need to improve their finishing. Saw that at the World Cup as well, and we've seen that prior. It's something that Australia does need to improve. Can you see them improving that, or is it still the players, they're not good enough to improve in that finishing section?
Yeah, I think, the first thing you look at is probably the number 9 position, which is probably still vacant or up for grabs, if you will. Tommy Juric, he's always flirted with form and how well he's played for Socceroos has been always questioned. And, the way I see it is I think we probably rely on our midfielders too much in scoring goals. Obviously, Jedinak was our only scorer with penalties in the World Cup, and even the build-up, Rogic was scoring most, and Moy with the occasional free kick, and probably the occasional header from Sainsbury or a fellow defender. So, look, I think it's the number 9 spots always going to be up for question in the next few months. Obviously, Tim Cahill's left a pretty big hole in that forward spot. So, I think we obviously going off this morning, we do have the ability to score goals, but there's obviously a difference between Kuwait and teams like France and Denmark and Peru that we faced in the World Cup, and then obviously the games that matter a lot more. But I can't look to question the Socceroos too much from this morning, but I think Arnie knows what he needs to start improving on from a 4-0 win, which obviously isn't much, but there's always still areas.
And it is positive signs heading into the Asian Cup in January next year. We'll move on now to the Nations League. England took on Spain, and they won 3-2 this morning. It's the first defeat for Spain in Spain since 2003.
Exactly right. 15 years and a fantastic drought broken by England. And it was England's youngest, I think, side since 1959. So positive signs, especially obviously coming off the semi-final reach in the World Cup. And, you know, I know you were one that actually backed them going into that competition. And I think a lot of us questioned you, but you've read them very well. And very positive signs for England this morning. Sterling and Rashford scorers as well. As we were talking off air, they're probably the two players struggling to finish. And Sterling's first goal in 28 games for the three Lions. So, I think that's for England and for Gareth Southgate, very positive signs. And he was going into the match thinking that, you know, his players probably weren't as fresh from once when they left the World Cup, with obviously the league football starting quite early. So I think it's a positive sign for him. And as for Spain, you know, fantastic outlet for them. But I think England were just too good this morning.
And that is if that win there, I think they're trying to avoid relegation from their group in the Nations League. But this is something that England were looking forward to. They've now playing with a 4-3-3 instead of the three at the back. Gareth Southgate said earlier in the week that they've improved. He has confidence in his players now, so he doesn't need to be so defensive and play three at the back with the two wing backs, which he's now enabling them to play further forward. And we've seen even with Jadon Sancho in the squad, with Maddison as well, they've got this creativity now in the England setup that this is how they'll probably set up for the future.
Yeah, exactly right. It's great to see Southgate, you know, backing his younger players, Winks as well, midfield, and Mason Mount into selection.
Even Ross Barkley.
Exactly right. There's these players that probably, you know, I think you look probably 2-3 years ago at England still had flirted with the likes of Lampard, Jared Terry, and leaving that era. And I think now whilst the World Cup had certainly a different side, we've now, right now, has hit this new era of three lines football with you know, names like Sancho, Maddison, Mount, even like names like Barkley, who were probably leaders at still such a young age. So I think it's really exciting to see for England. And, you know, a nil-all draw with Croatia as well, who obviously reached the final. So a great little period for them in international football whilst they were just friendlies. I think the National Nations Cup is still, you know, something to keep an eye on.
Well, Jamie Carragher said after the game that that game felt like a Champions League match, and he paid testament to the Nations League. I think it's a great initiative, and I think there was a lot of questions about it when it was first implemented, but I think now we're seeing how good it is and how countries are taking it serious, these so-called friendlies.
Yeah, exactly right. International break for most, when especially is just friendlies, there's no qualifiers or knockout games on ready. So it's good to see they've adjusted the system a bit more to have it more fan based and, you know, more viewers and more of a focus on winning in these friendly games. So I think it's been absolutely fantastic, and it's good to see we still have obviously lower leagues playing, but, you know, well deserved rest for some of the higher leagues.
Now on to Scotland. They've suffered 6 defeats in 8 matches under Alex McLeish. They lost 2-1 to Israel in the Nations League and then 3-0 to Portugal in a friendly. Captain Andy Robertson came out after the Israeli game and said that there's people that want Scotland to fail and enjoy seeing them fail.
Yeah, I think most would be England fans by the sounds of it. But no.
Well, he said that some people in Scotland also want to see him fail.
Yeah, I think that's a fan base you can get in football. I think that's something we saw from England fans probably, you know, 2-3 years ago in probably the lead up to the World Cup. You know, they didn't back him, and it was kind of win-win for England fans. Either the team played well or they just pretty much attacked their own team. So, you know, there's always, you know, you can always get furious at your football team, especially a national team. And a team like Scotland, 2-1 loss to Israel is very disappointing. As for the Portugal game, Portugal, you know, very strong outfit. And whilst they even, like Portugal themselves, probably made a few moves to try and add into a different team, it was probably a chance for Scotland to show what they had against probably a weaker Portugal side. But, yeah, going off the 2 wins in the last 8 games for them, really disappointing from the nation.
They're playing a 3-5-2 formation. They're trying to fit in both Kieran Tierney and Andy Robertson. It's hard when you've got two, they're probably their two best players, and they both play that same position. Tierney's been forced to play as a left-sided centre-back, but he has struggled in that position. How do you try and incorporate both players? Do you have to change the formation to allow both players into the team, or are you better off playing a certain formation and just playing one of those players?
Usually it's a bit easier with, you know, maybe attacking midfielders or centre-backs, like you said, like there is multiple positions. But a left-back position, I don't think you can really create that new formation with two wide players on that same side. You can look to obviously move one to the right, And I wouldn't want to see one more attacking than the other and having too much focus on one left side where the opposition can just read where most of that play is going. So I think they probably just look to need for more of a spread where there is playing Tierney as a halfback. Might have to be the way to go. But yeah, it is unfortunately, you know, it's a good predicament to have two star players, but at the same time, you know, when they are both in that fullback position on the left side, it can be quite a head scratcher for the manager. But I would, yeah, I think moving Tierney into centre back, it might just be a process that he might have to slowly deal with, or pushing over to the right back at some point.
Because both are so great going forward and both can cross the ball in, is there any opportunity for one of them to play further up the field?
I guess so. When we talk about wide players, it's either really attacking or that hold back, or we do want to play that defensive role. So, like you said, they're both fantastic long ball passers, and maybe you can have, I'd probably say you'd have Robertson push up a bit further. I'd like to see Tierney holding back. But like I said before, I wouldn't really want to see both of them on that same side, whether one was pressed further up and one was shorter. But you do have players over the years at younger parts of their career, you know, start that left back position or that wide back position and push up and become forwards. And, you know, obviously Gareth Bale's probably the main focus there. Ryan Sessegnon for Fulham, you know, started off as a defensive player, and now he's looked at, you know, quite an attacking and aggressive player. So it could work changing, but I guess that's something Scotland will have to focus on and deal with, and maybe it could be a catalyst to them picking up some more wins.
Northern Ireland, now they drew nil all with Austria, but Kyle Lafferty, their striker there, he pulled out of the fixture the day before training started. At midnight, he called his manager, Michael O'Neill, to tell him that he would not be in the squad. Ian Wright came out and said that was disgraceful and he should have been in the squad even if he was injured. What do you make of that? Like, calling your manager at midnight the night before to tell him that you're not going to be in the squad.
Yeah, it's interesting because you think that you probably would have had doubts, you know, as early as the selection was. So I don't know why he hasn't really communicated with the managerial group leading into it. And like a last minute call, that's always going to leave a manager and the board fuming with you know, having to rush around, and it just changes. A player like Lafferty, as skilled as he is, and especially for Ireland, well, Northern Ireland, they want to, you know, they want to have this consistency in their lineup, and this doesn't start from, you know, the managers don't pick the side 40 minutes before the game like it's released. It's a whole week's worth of build up, and you know, calling the night before and saying, "Hey, Gaffer, you know, I'm not feeling up to it tomorrow." It's probably something that you can't really have as a professional footballer. So disappointing to them. And unfortunately for Northern Ireland, they also had the 2-0 loss this morning to Bosnia and Herzegovina. So those sides, like Scotland, Northern Ireland, and also Republic of Ireland with a 0-0 against Denmark, struggling to pick up 3 points in friendlies. Like I said, it is friendlies, but they are also, you know, good indicators of where the team's at.
And then we'll move on to Republic of Ireland, 0-0 draw with Denmark. There was a really good article written, I forgot which paper it was for, but it was talking about the struggles that Ireland have of getting players that are playing in the Premier League. So they had stats, and only 2% of the players starting in the Premier League now are from Ireland. And when you compare that to how it was the years prior, I think it was up to 26 players were starting in the Premier League of Irish descent. So they've been struggling with that, and we've seen that now on the field. They didn't qualify for the World Cup, and now they're struggling in this Nations League.
Yeah, actually, I think we were talking about how players, the last few players to play in the Premier League and for Ireland were Keane, Gibson at United, and when you do talk about when they had the induction of the Premier League in the late 20th century, that there was probably, I think, close to 30 players.
32.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, it's been a poor drop off, and you've kind of followed that form in football. But they've got still got a strong youth system, and I think there's promise. But I think they're just in this little era of football. It might last probably 4 or 5 years where they just don't have this star name or this group of players that can gel well together just yet. So it's just going to be a waiting game, I guess, for them.
Martin O'Neill became the first manager of Ireland to not be able to select a player from one of Manchester United, Liverpool, or Arsenal. That's just showing you how much they're struggling to find that talent. We're moving on now to the Premier League and Arsenal, who have won or who are undefeated in 9 games in all competitions since their 2 defeats to start off the Premier League season. Unai Emery has implemented his style of play. The fans are loving it. The players are enjoying playing it as well. Are they title contenders? That's what some people are suggesting. I know Paul Merson said that they weren't. He still thinks that they're well off, but they're in the top 4 and they're showing signs that they can do what maybe Man City and Liverpool can do.
Yeah, I wouldn't agree with Mason and say they're well off. I'd say they're in. I've actually put them in the category of their own. I think you have the top three in Liverpool, City and Chelsea, yeah, who look like they are probably a couple of legs ahead of the rest. And dare I say, Arsenal are the fourth best team in the league at the moment.
You think they're better than Tottenham?
I believe so. I think they'd have them a nudge ahead of Tottenham. You talk about the first two games, and again, so it was a 2-0 loss to Man City and a 3-2 loss to Chelsea. Now, I think with the top six, that's where Arsenal are divided. If they can hold their own form against those sides, they can probably push closer to those top three teams. Now, depends how, like, that's the form it is. The way they can play against these lower sides and middle table sides, they look as good as anyone. But when it does come to a bigger side, it's going to be interesting to see how Emery plays or if he changes his game style to work and to pick up points against these sides. I think they are separated. I think they are just above Tottenham and United. But the way that City, Chelsea and Liverpool are playing at the moment, it's probably a brand better. But the last nine games, I do think, you know, if they keep up this run of form, they could certainly push into the title contention.
And I think a great example of that was in those first two games, we saw how Peter Cech reacted to being pressed by the opponents. He was struggled with his ball distribution out from goal. And even after that, we've seen him now improve his distribution. But they haven't really been playing any great teams after those first two fixtures. They've scored the second most goals in the Premier League this season. They average 2.4 a game. Lacazette is in, I would say, his best form for Arsenal since crossing over last season. Plus Aubameyang as well. Aaron Ramsey, who we still don't know if he's going to re-sign with him. He said that he would like to re-sign, but there's also reports that he could be going to Liverpool or even Manchester United in January. He's had 3 assists this season, the most of any player at Arsenal. So there are signs there. But do you still see... The defensive fatalities are still there, in my opinion, with Socrates there, but he's now injured. That's the one struggle.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's probably, I'd say, a mirror image to Liverpool last season in a way that their front three or four are really, you know, playing well and playing well together and sharing this workload. Aubameyang's had 19 goals or been a part of 19 goals in his 21 games since joining last season. And obviously you talk about Ramsey's been fantastic and whether he'll stay or go, but you look at Liverpool last season really struggling in that back third and the way that, you know, they're really relying on this forward half. But I think that's, you're right there. I think it's this back four that they can't find this consistency. And I think they've finally found some in midfield. I think Granit Xhaka is probably finding a bit more consistency in his game this season than what we found what we expected from him when they signed him 2 years ago. So, I think it's this back third that they can't. Obviously, Hector Bellerin was one player 2 years ago who was probably the best in his position. That was quite a quick drop-off. He's still probably in their best 11, but they're certainly working with youth at the moment in that back four.
I think with Hector Bellerin and even Nacho Monreal, they're not the ideal fullbacks for the style that they want to play. They're not great going forward. Their passing and distribution isn't ideal for the Emery style. And with Granit Xhaka, it's probably because he's playing more of a freer role now with Torreira or Guendouzi as his defensive partner, his partner in defensive midfield. So he's allowed to move forward. And he's even said that he feels like he's improved his game. But there are stats to suggest that he hasn't when he has his pass accuracy has decreased. But that's probably because of his long balls have increased. So 10.7 long passes per game compared to last season, which was about 7.
Yeah, exactly right. When obviously it's harder to just be nailing a pass when it's, you know, extended play. But I think it'd be interesting to get up the figures for that shorter pass game for him and see, you know, where if I would assume that part of his game would have increased. But like I said, they're playing fantastically well and in this midfield I've found an absolute star in Guendouzi, Xhaka, Torreira. I think they'll slowly work together as we've seen in their front third with Aubameyang and Lacazette. So it's been solid for them, and I think depth has been one thing that's worked for them as well. Welbeck every now and then has come on and played well. But look, I think it'll just be a bit of a process for them to slow. But I think the focus at the moment is on their defence.
And they take on Leicester City this weekend. That was the game last season. Was that the 4-3 to start off the year? Was it 4-3?
I think it was close to. It certainly kicked it off.
I know they've had some really good games in recent years. And we know Leicester won the title. The year they won the title, Arsenal did beat them both times that year. But that's going to be a cracking game.
Absolutely. I think Jamie Vardy's quite happy to be playing. I think he scores a goal a game. I think 6 games, 6 goals for him against the Gunners. But, you know, Leicester, struggled away at times, and I think certainly to Arsenal. Arsenal have certainly had the upper hand against them in their rivalry since Leicester have come up through the Premier League and over recent years. So, yeah, I think it'll be a fantastic game, a fantastic attacking game, unfortunately, for Leicester in that 2-1 loss to Everton. I think Everton were just the better side. Leicester, you know, they look like quite a strong outfit, but, you know, it'll be interesting to see with, you know, if Maddison comes back fit and healthy from the week's international games and how Arsenal play with their return of some stars. So, no, I think it'll be a fantastic game, one of the games to watch for the week.
Yeah, it was the 4-3 victory to start off the season last year, and then they lost 3-1 to Leicester in May last season. What do we see as a result? Do we think Arsenal are going to make it 10 wins in a row?
I will say it will be. I think a 2-1 win.
Yeah, but I'm going to go the same there. Let's move on to the other big game. It's 10:30 p.m. Saturday night in Australian Eastern Standard Time. That is Chelsea taking on Manchester United. United haven't won at Stamford Bridge since 2012. It's one of the grounds that they've struggled at. Even under Sir Alex Ferguson, they struggled there. But this time, this is a crucial game for Jose Mourinho. He probably wants to get one over his former team. Is it going to happen, or is Sarri ball going to beat United?
I think it'll be an interesting contest to see how Mourinho lines up. I think, you know, who knows what we could see from Man United starting 11. But like you said, they've only had that one win at Stamford Bridge. And I think it was only in 16 games that they've had one. Mourinho's actually struggled against all the former teams he's managed when with United. So, yeah, I think it'll be interesting. I think the Sarri ball will probably prevail. It'll be interesting to see how they look to counteract Hazard on that left side. And who they start on that right. Obviously, Dolot has been fantastic in glimpses, but they've been playing young and with Valencia, you know, lack or question over fitness. It'll be interesting to see, you know, how they work with Hazard. But like, I guess it's a little cliche, but I think this game's certainly going to be won from midfield. It really depends, you know, which Paul Pogba turns up. He's been in fantastic form of late. And with the likes of Fred, and obviously I'm not sure if Matic will be lining up for United on the weekend, but would we see this Man United midfield outfit beat, you know, what Chelsea could pick between, you know, 3, 4, 5 players in midfield? They'll probably you know, dominate United's midfield.
Well, does Ander Herrera start? Because we know he's played that role where he's been tagging or man-marking Eden Hazard last few times that they've played, and he has been successful in that role. So do you see Ander Herrera starting?
Yeah, I guess it's a chance. I think obviously what most managers or all managers should be doing is looking back at, you know, previous games against the same outfits, and it's certainly one that has worked. It's been a role that, you know, Herrera seems to be comfortable playing at times. I think there was one where he picked up the red card against Chelsea a couple of years ago. But United, I think that was one of United's stronger games against them. And then there was also another one. You know, I think since they brought in Kante, it's certainly changed how this rivalry has come in, because he's certainly, I think in most games, he's even put, I think, one or two past United in games, a player who we don't really look to for scoring for Chelsea. But look, I think it might work for Herrera. We've seen certainly a new Hazard this season. He's taken his game to a new level. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see. Like I said, we don't know how Mourinho will line up with you know, how much he's changed the team so far this year.
And Romelu Lukaku hasn't scored in 6 games in all competitions, including national games. I'm pretty sure he came out a day or two ago and said that he's open to leaving United and going to Juventus. That's a bit worrying, isn't it?
I think it was more of, I think he was complimenting Juventus with the interest they gave. You know, I don't know how much we can read into it, but a player like Lukaku, the form, I think he fits some systems and some he doesn't. You look at his record for Belgium. I think he scored, you know, 28 goals or so in about less than 30 games.
Pretty sure he holds the record there.
Yeah, he's playing fantastically well nationally, but then again, he has got Eden Hazard with him as well as a few other handy names in that Belgian outfit. But no, look, I think that it could be time for him to score against a former team would be fantastic, but
and against a big team.
Exactly right. That's one thing that's always put over his head is who he does score against and how much they matter in big games and when he does. But look, I think that Chelsea's backline have shown the occasional slump and probably just a run of poor form in you know, as much as 5 to 10 minutes in one game can see them, you know, drop a point or two. So no, I think it'll be fantastic to see Lukaku play well, but I think it could be that his form is obviously based on how Man United's midfield are running.
And what's our tips for this game?
I'm going to go a 1-0 win. I think it's... I can't pick who that... I don't want to be a fence sitter, but I think a 1-0 win each way.
We can't have each way 1-0 win. You've got to choose
it'll
one.
It'll be a close game. I think it'll be a low-scoring game. I think if I had to, I'd probably be leaning close to Chelsea.
I'm going to go 3-0 victory to Chelsea. We're going to take a break now, and we're going to return with our EFL segment. Welcome back to the English Football Show right here on FNR, your home of football in Australia and around the world. If you would like to call us at any time, you can call us on 99 44 99 99, or you can SMS us on 0428 933 345, or you can even tweet us at EF_show or at FNR_radio. We do have a guest on the line. We've got Jerry Pruitt, the Bristol Rovers fan from Perth. Jerry, can you hear us?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Can you hear me? Yes, we can hear you. Thank you for joining us on the English Football Show. Last time we spoke to you, Bristol Rovers were 22nd on the table. They have now moved up one place to 21st. They are still in the relegation zone, and they are still struggling. There are still reports about maybe the manager might leave. How have you assessed their performances in recent weeks?
Yeah, it's still been poor. In fact, I think I'm looking through the 13 games played this season, and there's probably three good performances in there. Recently, they've been pretty poor. And there's a whole series of... Well, I think the club are thinking of changing their name to Bristol Rovers Neil. They've not scored in the last four league games. They've only let in two goals in those four games. So they've drawn two and lost two of them 1-0. So it's looking a bit gloomy.
They had a 3-1 victory over Coventry five games ago, match day nine. After that victory, were there signs that they would be improving, or was that just a one-off performance?
That was a really weird game. As I said before, I follow the games on iFollow, so I'm able to see most of the games. And that one, Rovers could have been 3-0 down in the first 6 minutes. Things cleared off the line, Coventry hit the post, and a series of really dangerous corners. And then... I think it was on about half an hour, there was a terrible defensive backheader by Coventry. With their defence push, what happened, it let one of the Rovers strikers through one-on-one on goal, which tucked away really nicely. And they really got on top of that game. Played pretty well, but Coventry came back into it. It was a really odd game, that one. It's the only time Rovers have scored more than one goal this season in a game, which speaks volumes.
Sorry, Jerry. Yeah, obviously, you do talk about the goal difference in goal-scoring record you've had so far. Look, you have only scored 9 goals in the league this year, but you've only conceded 13. So that really shows where the team's at with their defensive structure as opposed to their attacking. Have you found that the defence this year has been obviously a positive sign, but how have you looked to that in transition from defence to attack?
Yeah, I think that defensive strength is owed a lot to a keeper they've got on loan, Bonham from Brentford, who's been in absolutely superb form. One of the away defeats was a 1-0 loss at Luton, and I think with the previous keepers we've had, that could have been 5 or 6. And he looked very confident. So he instills a lot of confidence in the defence around him. So that's great. But you're absolutely right. The transition from defence forward, the midfield are just missing in action. We brought in Alex Rodman from Shrewsbury and Upson from MK Dons. And both of them have been really poor. Both that have come in with reasonable reputations in midfield, but the midfield's just woeful, really, this season.
The next two games are against Oxford and Wimbledon, both teams struggling as well this season. They're both crucial games for Bristol Rovers, but there was a lot of negativity around the formation that they played, that the Gas played against Burton last week. Do you think that they need to attack more, and do you think that they have the quality of players to be able to play further up the field?
In terms of the quality of players, like I said, with Rodman and with Upson, they, on paper, they were two guys that came in and thought, wow, this is really going to improve things. And they've just not come up to expectations. And that's where you feel the frustration of the coach, Darrell Clark. He's previously managed to motivate players. There's a midfield player that he's brought in, Stuart Sinclair, that he had at Salisbury and has never played league football. And everyone thought, oh, once you get back into the league, he's going to be out of his depth. And he's just a Viking. He just charges into everything, and he's like the Mr. Perpetual Motion and wears his heart on his sleeve. He stepped up into the league. He stepped up into League One. And when he came back into the team, that whole added a different dimension there. But as I say, Upson and Rodman have just not come to the show, not come to the show in those terms. Yeah, the last two games that they've both lost 1-0, they've conceded goals after 90 minutes. In the Walsall home game, they hit the inside of the post on 90 minutes and then Walsall broke away and scored. So what could have been a 1-0 home win turned into a 1-0 home defeat. Against Burton on Saturday, one of the strikers had a one-on-one, which he fluked it to the keeper. And again, the defence let a goal in after 90 minutes. Now, you know, to only let in two goals in four games shows the strength, but not to score in any of those four games, that's where it's really weak. And it's the midfielder not creating anything for the forwards.
Yeah, obviously you talk about, we'll talk about the last two games. You had the Football League Trophy match against Yeovil Town, the 2-0 home win there. But going into the Burton side, I think Clark made five changes from what was a promising side into a potential match-winning game on the weekend. How did you find that, you know, changing almost half the starting 11 after a positive performance?
Yeah, it's something that he's always done. And I can see where he's coming from that. And he's also someone that's not frightened of making changes within a game as well. So sort of fluidity of formations and fluidity of players on there. Yeovil are a Division 2 team, not a Division 1 team. And it was a Checker Trade Trophy game. So, I mean, that team that went out there was probably never going to play in the league. And Yeovil did chances in that game as well. So though there was a 2-0 scoreline, it wasn't an emphatic 2-0 score, really. So, yeah, look, I think that team that were up there at Burton should have been capable of winning the game. I watched the game, and there was a lot of fanfare before about Alex Rodman. He's coming from Shrewsbury, saying that he's fit. He needs to show what he's capable of doing. And I think if he had three or four touches in the whole game, he was almost completely anonymous. It was quite a while before I even realised he was playing.
You've seen more League One games than we have this season by following Bristol Rovers. Which teams have impressed you so far this season?
Yeah, I've actually gone through and listed out all the games that I've watched this season and my assessment. Accrington looked really good. I was really impressed with them. That was our first home game. And they beat us 2-1. And the Billy Key, inevitably, he seems to love throwing against Rovers, but a player that I admire greatly, scored their winning goal. And they look really solid. I'm not in the least bit surprised to see them way up where they are. And the other team that has looked impressive so far have been Luton, where, as I say, Rovers lost 1-0, but it could have been 4-5-6, really. So most of the other games, I didn't see the Portsmouth home defeat, and apparently Rovers should have won that game. So, you know, it's quite good that they've been able to match someone up there. But, I mean, they've played Bradford, they've played Rochdale, Burton, Plymouth. So team, and I'll run away at Wickham. So teams round about where they are, and they've been poor games with two poor teams. And I think, as Darrell Clark said before the season, you know, let's wait till we get 10 games in and we'll see how the table looks. And I don't think it lies.
So do you think that you're still in a relegation fight this season, or is there any way that Darrell Clark can change the fortunes of the Gas, and you won't be fighting for relegation at the end of the season?
I think it's going to be a long, hard season, in all honesty. And there's rumours about the change of ownership of the club. It seems as though the Jordanian bankers that came in have lost interest in the club. And it's going to need an infusion of something. I think I mentioned last time we were on it, we've lost three strikers over the last 18 months. Yeah. Matty Taylor went to Bristol City, Billy Bowden went to Preston, and Ellis Harrington went to Ipswich. So to take all that goal scoring out of the team, you can't just keep plucking players from non-league and expect them to perform straight away. So I think it's going to be a struggle for the rest of the season. You keep looking at the table and think, oh yeah, like you were just saying, with the next two games, Oxford and Wimbledon coming up, I'm thinking, oh yeah, that looks as though that's promising. But they've never performed on any of these easy games.
And one more question to end it. Can you tell us why the Bristol Rovers nickname is the Gas?
Yeah, it's quite a good story, this one. It relates to the old ground at Eastville that we had up until the early 80s. And it was one of the reasons I became passionate about the club. I went there as an 11-year-old and had a greyhound tracker at it. And to me, it looked like Wembley. I didn't realise it was a ramshackle old dump, really, but it just looked great. And it was a fabulous atmosphere at the ground. But right behind one of the stands, there was an old gasworks. And when the gasworks was working, the gas was coming out, you just used to get this terrible smell around the ground. And there was one particular occasion when we had a local derby game on against Bristol City, and the City fans were holding their noses and singing out, "The Gas, the Gas," complaining about it. But the Rovers fans sort of chanted back to them, "You'll never beat the Gas." So Rovers then took on the nickname of being Gasheads, and City fans thought that was quite a disparaging thing, but Rovers have worn that badge quite proudly. And it's quite nice to have that as an unofficial nickname, and it goes for everything at the club now.
That's incredible, that.
That's a good story.
Thank you for calling in today. We really appreciate it. Hopefully we could talk to you again in the not-too-distant future, and hopefully the Gas are not in the relegation zone when next time we speak to you.
Yeah, no, that's great. Good to talk to you guys. Thanks.
Thanks, Jerry.
Thanks, Jerry.
Cheers. Bye.
All right. Thank you to Jerry for that. We really appreciate that. And of course, if anyone else would like to talk about their teams, they can call us on 99 44 99 99. Let's move on with our EFL segment, and let's talk about Aston Villa. They appointed Dean Smith as their manager, along with John Terry as his assistant. And was a lot of talk about Terry Henry replacing Steve Bruce, but he has now moved to Monaco. Is this the right man? We know you're a big fan of Brentford, Mitch.
Yeah.
Is this the right man for Aston Villa?
I was actually quite surprised. Obviously, this is a dream move for Dean Smith. Big Villa fan growing up. And I think when the job arose, he was more than happy to take it. Obviously, you look where the Bees are at compared to Villa. But it was, like I said, interesting move. But once I found out that, this is something he's looked forward to for a long time, and when they offered him the job, he took it. And it's interesting where the Bees are at, but I think Villa have done really well. It's a fantastic manager. Did really well with Walsall for a few years before moving to Griffin Park with Brentford, and now, pairing with John Terry. And I think they've got a new sporting director in Jesus Garcia Pitach from Valencia, and who was also at Atletico Madrid. So I think the board's really worked well to find a new group, which could be, a new start for Villa and hopefully spark something in their season. But look, Smith, 9th, 10th and 9th in his last three seasons with the Bees. Obviously, this year, I think they sit 1 point outside of the playoffs. Smith did really well in recruitment. And he talked this morning, I think, about with the list he had, and he knows where they need to improve. And he talked about the centre-back, and I think that's where he played as a footballer himself, Smith. So I think, he might even look to January as early as that to add to the centre-back roles. He listed that really Chester and Twinsaby were the only players they had in that position. But he was really happy with the list he has, and it could be really promising. For
Well, they'll force to play Alan Hudden at centre-back in their last game. Former manager Ron Atkinson said he was delighted to see Smith take over the reins at Aston Villa after his performances at Brentford and Walsall. I really liked this quote that he came out with, and he said, "My dad was a steward and I was brought up at Aston Villa, but they're not going to give the job to Prince William, are they, for being an Aston Villa fan?" So he's really happy there to be taking over his boyhood club. Let's move on now to League One, where two games were on BN Sport this weekend in Australia because of no championship games. And the first one was Barnsley versus Luton. That was a really good game, that one.
Fantastic. A fantastic attacking game, I thought. Both defences had backs to the wall, and obviously Barnsley, you know, were looking a strong outfit. And I think following the win, we can certainly label them we'll label the League One a top three sided league now. We had Portsmouth and Peterborough probably, you know, a nudge ahead of the rest, but I think Barnsley have certainly crept up and they sit, I think, a point away from second. And whilst they are only themselves are only a point ahead of Doncaster, I think we can probably pair them with the top two. You know, midfield was fantastic. I think it's the best in the league at the moment. They obviously didn't have Socceroo Kenny Dougal, but Potts put in probably a man of the match performance. Fantastic.
That is outstanding.
Yeah, absolutely right. Got one himself a goal. So and Moncur as well. I think out wide they had this suffocating form of defense when Luton had the ball, and I guess Luton defenders just weren't given that freedom and run, and they were really just overrun by Barnsley's midfield and attack. So great pressure from them, and still scoring three goals. So confidence and consistency across the whole 11.
They did look better in the second half, Luton, and James Collins scored an 86th minute to make it interesting. But that's League One, there's so many teams in the top six that we don't know who could be promoted. We've got Portsmouth on top of the table. They're 3 points clear ahead of Peterborough. Then you've got Peterborough second, Barnsley third, and we know that they're how they played in the championship last season. They've got the owners, including Billy Beane from the Moneyball in the baseball. So they've got a certain style of how they want to run the club. Doncaster as well, Sunderland, and even Accrington. And we just heard from Jerry, he's really impressed by them. So it's such an even league.
Yeah, you talk about Accrington. I think it was probably close to a month ago, I'd say 2 to 3 weeks ago now, that they were sitting in fifth. It was the highest they've ever sat in English football for 50 years. And when you talk about, you know, a club like them level with Sunderland, a club that's in the Premier League 2 seasons ago, it's fantastic for them. But no, real tight at the top. I think obviously Walsall another one. But look, I think that the race at the moment is quite congested, and it's fantastic to see. I think even, you know, that bottom when we were talking about Bristol Rovers is tight as well. And it's something that we've seen in these lower divisions a lot with, you know, probably more, you know, 20, 22, 24 teams in these leagues. It's been fantastic. And as for Barnsley, I think they're pressing really well and hitting a sweet spot in this part of the season with obviously Portsmouth and Peterborough occasionally dropping a couple of points. But it's getting real tight at the top.
And the other game that was on BN Sport, Wimbledon taking on Portsmouth, 2-1 victory to the away team there. Portsmouth remain on top, 3 points clear of Peterborough. They look really good in that first half. They looked impressive. Wimbledon came back second half, but it was a bit too late. They brought on John Henson, and he's one massive man. He's 6'4", shoulders out, chest out, everything. He's huge, but he couldn't help him score that second goal.
Yeah, unfortunate for Wimbledon, but no, Portsmouth, they are the team to beat this year. They've been flying the flag quite high, and 3 point gap now. Them and Peterborough have always, you know, flirted with each other and top spots. So strong run of form for them at the moment, and it's great to see them on top. And who knows, we saw them dive down from the Premier League quite quickly. We could see them push up towards it very soon. But another fantastic game for them. And I think moving into the next week, a lot of tough fixtures ahead, but we could see a lot of movement at the top of the table as well as the bottom.
Sunderland versus Blackpool was supposed to be that was one of the games I was looking forward to watching this week, but that game was called off because Sunderland had three players who went on to international duty, and that included John McLaughlin, their number one goalkeeper, Brian Oviedo, and Tom Flanagan. So that game was called off. They asked for the game to be called off, and the league, Football League allowed that. But you said Brian Oviedo wasn't even going to play this week because he was suspended.
Well, they've got a few problems at the moment on top of the international break. Oviedo is following a suspension. Max Power, the name you love to touch but can't touch, has also got the suspension. They've also, obviously, there's injuries as well to I think Gooch and Leuvens is so look, it's a depleted side, and one thing I guess coming from Sunderland is going into this game with, you know, 6, 7, 8 players in their best side out, that they'd certainly be probably looking to I guess appeal for a postponed match which they got, and hoping that, you know, this side doesn't deplete any further. But like you said, looking forward to the game, it was going to be a fantastic outfit. Sunderland have been, you know, playing quite well while they've dropped down and could be back up in the Championship soon. But and Blackpool as well, just the one loss so far this season.
And in now to League Two, Port Vale 2, Lincoln 6. Lincoln remain top of the table. I saw a tweet after that game and someone said any normal team would score 4 and then that's it, not score anymore. But Lincoln, they continued the press and they scored 6 in that game. They look like they're set to move up to League One. I can't see them dropping from the top two promotion places.
No, they've been fantastic. 6 parts past Port Vale. It was an interesting game, I guess. Port Vale still managed to put, you know, 9 shots, I think 4 on target, as well as, you know, I think the Imps conceded 16 fouls. So the way I've seen it is that Lincoln obviously dominant so far, and I think Aspen, Port Vale's manager, came out following the game. I think the first thing he said to the press was, you know, that's a game you could probably get sacked after. I don't see it, you know, really heading that way at all. I think that, you know, the firing would probably further have this decline that we've seen under Port Vale from Bruno Ribeiro and Michael Brown, who probably had started this decline at the club. And it'd be, you know, disappointing to see Port Vale have a change in management. I think they really do have to back Aspen at the moment. But, you know, coming up coming up against a side like Lincoln, who, you know, well ahead in this league, it'd be disappointing. But no, they're playing fantastically well, and unfortunately for Port Vale, you know, put 2 past. But you know, I think they just need a stronger performance in the next month or so.
And Lincoln were Jason Shackle, Michael O'Connor, and John Akinde. They're 3 of their best players there. James Watson played in central midfield, and he played really well there. A lot of praise about his performance. He scored and he also assisted in the game. And Tom Pett, that was one September player of the month.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying. They've been absolutely fantastic so far this year, and it hasn't been this individual performance. It's this list of players who spread across the 11 and even off from the bench that have put them, you know, in the high rise of the table. And I think that, yeah, like you said, there's certainly a team that's going to be pushing up next season. I don't see them. I doubt to see, you know, such a change in form from what they've done so far to you know, the last match day. So no, it's been, yeah, very positive signs, and I look forward to how the season pans out for them.
Well, there's one team that doesn't have a lot of positive signs, and that's Macclesfield Town. Mentioned them last week how they sacked their manager after 12 games without a win this season, but they have now equal the record for the longest run without a win in English Football League, and that is 36 games. They equal Derby from the 2008 season.
Yeah, look, a 1-0 loss to Tranmere. Tranmere themselves have been absolutely fantastic in coming up, and a fantastic goal scored on the weekend by Gilmore. But look, they this weekend, I think they host Carlisle United on Sunday our time, and that's the big game, I guess, in their right. You know, I think Carlisle have already lost 6 games. I think they've won 6 and lost 6. So they're not prone to you know, they're not the strongest outfit that obviously Macclesfield have come across. But it'd be hard to see them pick up 3 points. So we could see the record broken this weekend.
So for me, it's important that people speak about the qualities I bring as a footballer.
You are a twat.
All right, our JB nominees for this week. Mitch, what's yours?
Mine's a big talking point. Leeds owner Andrea Radrizzani came out this weekend. You know, obviously following TV revenue numbers, he's called for a Premier League 2 to be introduced as a taken over from the Championship. I think it's based off, you know, the amount of money that Leeds are having come in comparison or in contrasted to the amount of games or are shown on TV for them. We talk about, you know, when you go up to the Premier League, the influx in revenue from the TV deals. And I guess that's really what he's appealing for. But in my way, I think it's quite an outlandish call in the fact that the Premier League's in the main goal, isn't it? That's the whole reason to get into the Premier League, to win this I guess, prize cash bonus in a way. I think that if you look to split the Premier League into another second division. And we can't just look at English football in two main sectors. We have the top half and a second half, and I don't think that's how it should work. It just makes things more difficult for teams to come up again and battle for this promotion. And look, I think it's a silly call by me. I think Leeds are probably just after a bit more money. And I'm not a big fan. I guess I wouldn't really be backing the idea in the sense that it's, I guess, the Premier League is the main focus and the main goal for these lower teams and not just making it to the Championship and having to stagnate between that.
So if they get would they be able to get relegated from Premier League 2 and go into Football League 1?
Yeah, that's it. That's
so it's basically just renaming the Championship to Premier League 2 as the Premier League renamed from the First Division.
Exactly right. And I think it's more of just having a larger focus on this TV revenue that we see in the Premier League and the deals they have up there. And obviously it's a great influx of cash for them, but I think that's the main goal that the club should be working towards, not having, you know, I guess, like just a little bit extra cash coming from League One up into the Championship or Premier League 2 as they want to be.
Then we might as well have Premier League 3 and Premier League 4.
Exactly right.
My JB nominee is Neil Ardley, the Wimbledon manager. While watching that game, you could hear this person yelling the entire game with a high-pitched voice and had no idea who it was. And then the cameras turned to Neil Ardley, and it was him. It was this. I don't understand how he could yell for that long, 90 minutes, with that high-pitched voice. He's going to need butter menthols after that. He would have had a sore throat after that game. And, well, the players obviously didn't listen to it because they failed to win. All right, despite there only being one person in this quiz,
I get 3 points there,
we're still doing the
forfeited
quiz. No, you don't get that. What happens is if you get the wrong answer, I get a point. So I'm basically in this quiz
now.
All right.
We'll see how this goes.
So question one, who was the last United player to play for the Republic of Ireland?
Gibson.
Correct. Darren Gibson in 2011. Two, who was the manager of Chelsea when Manchester United last beat them at Stamford Bridge in 2012?
Mourinho?
Wrong. Roberto Di Matteo. So it's 1-1. Question three, true or false? Grimsby Town have never played in the First Division.
True.
False.
Oh.
They last played in the First Division of the top tier of English football in 1947-48.
Jesus.
So I'm 2-1, leading.
2-1, 2-1 lead.
Question four, who has won more First Division titles, Aston Villa or Wolves?
Aston Villa.
Correct. They've won 7, Wolves have won 3.
2-2 going into last.
Question five, name the team. This team was established in 1875. They were one of the founding members of the Football League in 1888. They have been English champions 3 times. They have also won 6 FA Cups and 1 Football League Cup. They last won the Premier League in 1995.
Oh, Jesus. I'm going to think of the starting sides.
Currently in the Championship.
Currently in the Championship. I'm trying to think one of the starting sides. Blackburn Rovers?
Correct.
There we go.
Blackburn Rovers. Mitch, you get 3 points.
3-2 win, 90th minute.
Coming back.
Winner.
Thank you for listening to the English Football Show this week. We'll be back again 11 a.m. Tuesday next week.